This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. You're listening to the Nerdcast on ProjectNerd.com.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
I knew it. I knew you were bluffing. I knew he was bluffing.
You're listening to the Nerdcast.
I feel like I should say something smart.
With Adam, Bob, Iggy, and Tyler.
You mustn't be afraid to dream a little bigger, darling.
Only on Project Nerd.
That is one big pile of shit.
Yeah. Did you watch the Ted Bundy movie?
Oh, no. I listened to a review of it, but I haven't watched it.
I was actually hanging out with Adam and Laura, and we watched it.
Well, that's fucking cool. Why don't you brag about it?
I will brag about it. As well as Crazy Rich Asians, which was really good.
There's a reason it like got a bunch of awards and stuff.
Yeah, I'm probably going to look at that book. But that's why we were talking about it when we were watching it, is that back in August, like I didn't know anybody personally who like immediately went to the theater to see it. So it was getting good reviews. Critics were really liking it and stuff too. But once it hit HBO a few weeks ago, it seemed like anybody I knew that was like, oh, I want to check this out. And everybody was loving it. So we watched it and it was hilarious. Awkwafina was hilarious in her small role, but it was pretty good.
Her whole family was funny.
Oh, yeah.
You get Kim Jong in there. Like
the dad. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's hilarious. It's a really good movie. I really like Constance Wu, although the internet kind of got after her today or this week. But
that's why I was wondering why it was popping up in my feed. But before we get too far into that, I'm going to let everybody who's now listening know that we are here for the Nerdcast, episode 194. And yeah, we're talking Crazy Rich Asians. That's now on HBO Go or HBO Now or HBO, if anybody still watches HBO that way. I don't feel like anybody does, but...
Oh, my mom.
Lots of people
totally
do.
Watches HBO that way.
Okay.
Unlike us, there are still lots of people out there with satellite and cable.
All right. Well, in that case, it's there. Crazy Rich Asians, really good. Again, we were talking about it was praised critically, and people who went to see it in theater did really good money-wise too, but there, watched it. We checked out the name's crazy long. It's the What the Judge Says, the incredibly vile. That's all I got. What's the incredibly vile, wicked item?
Incredibly
wicked,
evil, right?
Incredibly
shockingly
the Netflix Ted Bundy movie. Netflix Ted Bundy movie. Everybody knows what we're talking about.
It's called Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil and Vile.
There you go. Okay. So that dropped on Netflix last weekend, as well as Wandering Earth, which we talked about 2 to 3 months ago when it destroyed Chinese box office records. And we have more to talk about, obviously, with destroying box office records with Avengers still rolling through things. But both of those hit Netflix. You can check out the Wandering Earth review over at ProjectNerd.com. I still haven't checked that one out. I want to. It's on my list.
It's real long.
Is it? How long is it?
A little over 2 hours.
Is it? That's not too bad.
I mean, it's based on Chin Lu's, like one of his stories. He's the guy who wrote the Three Body Problem trilogy. So he's a really, really well-known sci-fi author in China, and since has become in the last few years really well-known in the Americas because of the translations of his books. And it follows one of them, and it's really fascinating. Definitely they take some departures from the books to make it more cinematic and more, what's the word I'm looking for? Get some more drama in there. It's also very Chinese, like in its themes and the way it portrays stuff. But I mean, it's a Chinese movie. I don't want to make that seem like, but don't go in expecting a big Hollywood style of movie. Yeah. So
yeah,
but it's very interesting. A lot of the special effects, I mean, there's a ton of special effects. Like very little of this movie was not shot in green screen. Some of them are really good. Some of them are a little, for as much as there is, it's pretty substantial. Like do you guys know the premise of it at all?
I do. We watched I watched the trailer and so was able to pick some up from that.
So yeah, a lot of the stuff on Earth where it's all icy and desolate is a little bit, and some of the like big wide shots of the Earth zooming, you know, past Jupiter is a little ridiculous, but it's fun and I had a good time.
Yeah, it looks interesting. I'll check it out for sure. If there's anything, Netflix is doing a really good job of bringing international content to us here in the States for streamers. And they're doing it obviously to get the international rights to some of these things. Because at the time, like the Wandering Earth was pretty much just opening up in China. I think when we were looking at it, blowing up the numbers, it was a few other countries specifically in Asia that were having some, you know, a few screens showing it as well. But most part, you weren't seeing it many places. So Netflix swooped in. They did that with some series as well. A lot of great content. The problem is that you really only get a dubbed option. You don't really get most of the stuff. You don't get the original tracks with
you can 100% watch The Wandering Earth in the original Mandarin
with can you
subtitles. Yes.
Oh, I was told different.
You have to switch it. It automatically
gotta make the choice.
Just like everything in Netflix, it will automatically go to the English dub if it exists, but you can switch it. I switched it back to Mandarin with subtitles.
Well, I stand corrected. Now I'm more excited. I think that was the only thing that I was hesitating on, because some of their dubs on Netflix are a little weak.
A little rough.
But yeah, so that's what's happening on streaming. And obviously, and we'll do our best to stay spoiler free, something else happening on streaming this past week. We are now down, by the time this airs, obviously, and obviously at time of recording, we only got one episode of Game of Thrones left, guys, ever. One episode left ever. And episode
I don't know if that actually counts as streaming. Like, I know you stream it, but it's a show that airs on television.
I guess, yes. Fine. Well, I guess that's fair, because I would say Brooklyn Nine-Nine is streaming too, because I watched that on Hulu, but I don't know. So
that's a network television show, Iggy.
Anyways, so television-wise, television/streaming. The category on Project Nerd is still called television, so it all kind of rolls into one now. Anything that is series-related, let's put it that way. So Game of Thrones, big shit happening. I think that's the best way to put it, really, without going too far. If you are somehow listening to a podcast called The Nerdcast and you haven't come across 9 million memes for what's happening every week, congratulations. You are a master ninja on the internet. But we'll still try to stay spoiler-free until the season's over and then probably do a big recap episode, because we're all watching it week to week. I know Bob made a comment in it. We don't know where Bob is tonight. He's supposed to be here. He might show up later. But Bob made a comment about it too. But it was definitely a lot going on. I wanted to bring it up for the one big thing too, because I know you two guys are crazy about this too. There were a few shots when the cinematography made me think of Alfonso Cuarón. Like, the cinematography was phenomenal in episode 5. It was phenomenal.
Yeah, I think say what you want about the story or any of, I think the acting was all very good. Any of the behind the scenes stuff has been fantastic this season. I think the CGIs look fantastic all the way through, and they've done lots of things with it. So, you know, plenty to do there. Obviously, people had issue with episode 3. I don't know if that was a compression from streaming or if it was shot too dark. I didn't have any issues.
I didn't have a problem with it. I think a lot of it was purposeful. I don't think a lot of people appreciated that it was going for a very specific aesthetic.
They wanted you to feel like, holy shit, I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah,
because that's what everybody that was there was supposed to be feeling. So
whatever else your feelings are about, you know, character arcs or writing or plotting or how this season has gone, the two things that have been spot on in every episode, I think, is the cinematography and the score has been really good these last 5 episodes.
Yeah, all the variations on the regular Game of Thrones theme that keep popping up in there.
Yeah,
like, oh, That's familiar, but a little different. Okay.
And they made some really interesting choices with cinematography in this episode that I really thought were, this line's going to get slightly spoilery, but right up until the certain point in the show, you're switching back and forth between viewpoints, including Daenerys's like POV camera. And then after a certain event, the camera never switches back to that POV again. And then that person's POV is always through the POV of someone else. And it's super effective for what they're trying to like.
No, they
they're trying to get across. It's really
and that's where the cinematography really shined, because it's, I mean, there's no, everybody knows that we're getting close to wartime. So I just was reminded of some great war movies that had, you know, cinematography of us in the field and everything, but you're exactly right. We were put into the field of everything. We very rarely saw it from the high perspectives anymore of the other people. And the score, evoked, especially this week, evoked a lot of emotion, played it right at the right time. So that's happening. Episode 6 this Sunday. It's here, guys. It's here. So I don't know.
Is that literally all we're going to talk about next week?
I feel like, do we talk about it next week or do we give it a week? We'll have time to figure that out. But I feel like if it goes the way that I think most people are going, we might be a little bit calmer with it. If something big happens next week, I don't know if we'll be able to contain ourselves anymore, because it's been rough already, especially this week. It's rough to contain ourselves on certain things. but I don't know.
I'm curious to hear everyone's take on it. I don't know how long I can wait to hear.
Right. Let's probably plan on it next week. Cause I think as we were just talking about Memorial Day week, we probably won't be recording. So we're probably going to plan it. So basically if you are a every week listener and you aren't caught up with Game of Thrones, either one, get caught up, or two, table episode 195, which is next week's episode. So that's that on Game of Thrones. We'll move on to avoid episode 194 having spoilers. But speaking of things coming up this weekend, another big movie weekend. So we're going to get into the nitty gritty here with obviously with Avengers and even talk a little bit. Pokemon came out this past week. Numbers are soaring, and specifically look at Disney Buena Vista, what they are doing box office wise this year already. Yeah. Adam's just like, he's throwing money right now, but it is crazy. But what I wanted to bring up is over the next 3 weeks, we have John Wick 3. We have the Aladdin remake, Brightburn, which is the James Gunn, like horror superhero type one. You got the new Godzilla movie. You got Rocket Man, the biopic, Dark Phoenix on June 7th with The Secret Life of Pets 2. And as we always know, those animated kid sequels always bring in some good money. And then wrapping out the next 4 weeks with Men in Black, Shaft. And there's a number of other movies too that a lot of people might consider ones, but these are the big blockbuster ones. We got a lot to watch over the next 4 weeks, a lot. And the reason I was bringing this up is you got two huge things right now on this is one, John Wick 3's praise is out of this world right now by the critics. Like the headlines I am seeing from these reviews from large review sites calling it the best action movie ever, or praise or all hail Keanu Reeves, or John Wick 3 is the perfect ending to the perfect trilogy. Words, those are strong, strong words in cinema, all being used from sites like Entertainment Weekly, from USA Today, things like this, big sites that are covering it. I'm getting a little excited. We got a big action movie this weekend that sounds like it delivers just like the first two. And I felt like it was pretty safe knowing how good the first two were, but I'm feeling really confident in it right now. What are you guys thinking about?
Oh, I'm more confident than I was. Cause when you are as successful as those first two are, I mean, it's almost too easy to miss that mark. Cause you've given yourself a really high bar, and it seems like they clear it. So that's exciting. And I'm down. I mean, I was always going to be down, but now I'm super down.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I won't say that I was worried. I was going to watch it no matter what, because no matter what else it had, it was going to have some of the best action sequences we've ever seen, because that's what they do in these movies, and they got to keep topping themselves. But I'm still one of those people who prefers the first one to the second one. Like, the second one had a lot of really cool world building with this world of assassins and some really great set design and amazing cinematography, and the action scenes obviously were awesome. It just didn't live up to the hype of the first one, I don't think, but this one looks real good. And like you said, the praise has been, I think they've almost hit 50 critic reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. They're still at 98%. I think it's like a 74 on Metacritic, which is really high for Metacritic.
But so. let's also make note here, those scores, this isn't a Oscar type drama pick. This is an action movie, beginning of the summer action movie that has that high of a score on Rotten Tomatoes and almost that many reviews. That's crazy. Crazy, guys. So It's been fair. I think it's what's great about John Wick is when we're going to look back at this trilogy in the future, there's going to be a lot of talk like we did with The Matrix, that how Matrix changed the way action sequences were done. John Wick has come in and I feel like is changing the way action sequences are done again. And we're going to see that influence more and more movies to the point I'm not going to be surprised if 10 years from now, we're not going to be saying, yeah, all that started with John Wick, right? Like, so it is awesome action, and Keanu Reeves, man, just owning it. It's going to be really hard to get back to Bill and Ted 3 after seeing him as John Wick like this for this long.
Oh, maybe they exist in the same universe. Maybe John Wick wakes up and sees a phone booth and is like, oh shit, that's right. And boom, starts. It all runs from there.
What do you say? Oh shit, or what do you say? Whoa.
I don't know if we need a crossover for that. But speaking of, you brought it up, to tie it back to streaming, all three Matrix movies are on Netflix right now too. So if you haven't watched those in a while.
Yeah. And we'll probably be discussing Matrix here in future movie night with Project Nerd, as some non-normal podcasters had a lot to say in our admin group when we brought up the new news for the Matrix, which is I can't believe I left it off the list here. Obviously, there's an article over at Project Nerd. It looks it's coming back. I think we always knew with the way everything is coming back that it was going to come back, especially because the Wachowskis left it set up to come back. And basically, yeah, the John Wick director is the one who was the stunt, led the stunts on the Matrix trilogy, was pretty open to say, yeah, Warner Brothers is working on it right now. So a lot to say still there on the Matrix. And obviously next week, I think we'll have a lot to say on John Wick. It's going to be exciting. I doubt any of us are going to wait too long to see it. So we'll probably have some words on it for sure. But the other reason bringing it up,
have they come out and said that it's a for sure thing? Because like last I heard that he said they were, and then someone for one of his representatives said no, he didn't. He said if they were to do one, he would be interested, but not that they are or something like that.
So. It's definitely up in the air. But I think the biggest thing that I hold on to is everything's being brought back. Right now is the right time. For two, the Wachowskis wanted to continue expanding that universe, but they wanted to wait. It was basically along the lines is like, we were able to do some awesome things here with where cinema was, with where technology was, and do things that you hadn't seen before. We can't just keep doing that. I think they're very intelligent filmmakers and stuff like in terms of that. They're like, we have this whole world painted. We'd love to come back and revisit it when we feel that technology has caught back up. And over the past few years, especially what James Cameron has done, you know, with 3D and frames per second and everything like that, we've seen some huge advancements in what we can do with special effects in cinema. So the time might be right. It is still a rumor. We made very clear in our article it's a rumor, because I know other sites were announcing rumors recently as news and got shot in the foot on that one, Michael Rooker specifically. So making it very clear, it is right now. He said it. Wachowskis haven't confirmed. Warner Brothers hasn't confirmed, but it is out there, and I wouldn't be surprised for sure. That's my long answer to your question. So,
okay. I saw like a lot of the articles that had been posted that said he was said that they were doing it again. His representative then came out and said, yeah, he was wrong about that. He was just saying, hypothetically, if they were to make another one, he would be in.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We will see.
I mean, I hope so.
I'm down for it for sure. In the meantime, obviously Fox is now owned by Disney, and Disney, yeah, if you guys haven't been paying attention, that's a thing, but Disney is making some adjustments with the Fox's Marvel slate. New Mutants, which was due out in the fall, is disappeared from the slate altogether. We have no official statement on what's going on with it. Excuse me, just gone. But Dark Phoenix was already, I mean, it was already coming. So it would have definitely been something hard for them at this point to delay or change. But it's really looking like right now Disney is embracing it, or Fox as Disney is embracing it, as they are marketing it very heavily right now and getting behind it. And then trying right now to grab, I don't want to say nostalgia, but grab that whole feeling of all the movies that have been the X-Men movies from Fox right now. They're trying to show this is, because this is obviously the last one in the Fox universe. If X-Men goes forward, it's going to be in the MCU. So they're trying to show this is the accumulation of everything that they've been building up. So at a very lesser extent, their end game.
Yeah, no, it's a smart play. You know, if that's what you're wanting to, you want to get as many butts in the seats as you can. And they've done some good X-Men movies. I won't begrudge them the good ones just because they also did some bad ones, which is okay.
I mean, they did some really bad ones.
Really bad?
They handled that franchise better than Fantastic Four.
X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Well, that's not good.
I'll watch, okay, maybe the reboot of Fantastic Four. I'll watch either of the first two Fantastic Fours before I'll watch X-Men Origins Wolverine again.
Oh, hands down. 10 times over. I'll sit through those 10 times over before I have to
see it. Might even watch those before I'd watch X3.
Yeah, Last Stand is
so bad.
Yeah, Last Stand. And I guess I forgot about, or maybe I wasn't counting Origins when I was thinking about X-Men movies.
Well, Deadpool fixed that timeline anyways.
Yeah, right.
He did. But I guess the question would be, which is the worst of the X-Men movies? Is it Origins?
Oh, it's Origins Wolverine.
is it Last Stand, or is it Apocalypse?
I'm standing with Origins Wolverine.
Apocalypse is watchable.
Yeah.
Have you even seen it?
I mean, I started watching it and then got about a quarter, maybe a third of the way in, and then just skipped to the end and watched
it. You didn't finish it?
No, I finished it. I just
didn't watch the middle part.
It was really bad.
It's not towards the top. I'll definitely say that. But I feel like X-Men Origins Wolverine is
X-Men Origins is bad, but I think we give it too much flack for certain things it did to certain characters, specifically Deadpool, which like really burned a lot of people off. Like that
is really the only character you couldn't screw up, though.
Yeah, I mean, the last act of that movie is pretty bad. Like there's a lot of good stuff early on, like an interesting take on the Weapon X program. Like there's some decent stuff early on, but it gets really bad in the last act. I would contend. I'm not going to say that it's worse, but Last Stand is bad from top to bottom. Like there's nothing in Last Stand that's even remotely redeeming.
Well, I think
you get the Juggernaut. That's about it.
Right.
You get a fight on the Golden Gate Bridge. That's
something you brought up in the past, Tyler, with the X-Men movies is that it's hard enough to do what the MCU did with taking these huge Marvel events and specifically with the Avengers. But when you put it in the mutants part with the X-Men, things that have happened in those comics to put it into a film, especially one movie like they tried to do with X-Men 3, is very, very difficult because it is usually spin-offs, this series, you have to read 20 different comics this month just to stay up top with the story.
Not to mention that a lot of X-Men storylines, like there's some really good things that X-Men have done in storylines because it was always a allegory for the other, like the mutants represented, you know, in different forms, you know, whether it's racism or different, like they always related like oppression of a minority and things like that. But at the same time, they have a lot of really cringy and really problematic storylines over the years, like really bad ones. To this day, there are still X-Men storylines that are upsetting people. I just read some articles about some recent ones that are like, they took some bad takes on stuff. And then to take some of those storylines and make them into movies and sometimes choose the worst possible interpretation of those storylines or really clunky, heavy-handed interpretations of those storylines. I don't know. Also, I don't know. And like, he's obviously had any number of problems, you know, offset, but then there's also the whole hang-ups with Bryan Singer. And I know some people are huge Bryan Singer fans, but then at the same time, he's done some really terrible things, X-Men included. So like, I don't know. There's a lot of, the X-Men franchise, both as a comic book and as a movie and as whatever else it's been, it carries a lot of baggage around, and sometimes it's hard to shed it in ways that are not super clunky or problematic or cringy.
Definitely. So are we any more optimistic about Dark Phoenix, or are we still kind of like, it's there?
I don't know. Outside of Jennifer Lawrence, Nicholas Holt, and James McAvoy, and Michael Fassbender.
If he keeps going and...
Those four who were kind of like the main guys in the first class. I don't feel like we really know any of these other characters. Like they keep trying really hard to make us care about new Jean Grey and new...
skip half of Apocalypse.
Still, this
is where you learned about them.
I mean, I watched good chunks of them, but I don't care about new Cyclops or new Jean Grey or
you're not supposed Kurt to care about Scott Summers because he's...
Scott Summers.
Jerky and annoying. Everybody knows he's jerky and annoying, and you're not supposed to be like, oh man, Cyclops, I really...
Listen, I felt bad for James Marsden when he got killed by Famke Janssen. I could give a shit less about this guy. I honestly can't off the top of your head even tell you what the actor is who plays the new Cyclops. I only know the name of the actress who plays the Dark Phoenix because she's Sansa. Like that's literally the only reason I know.
pretty much. But yeah, I don't know. So are you guys going to see it in theaters, or are we going to wait? You see it in theaters, Adam?
I'll see it in the theater. Yeah.
Well, I probably will not see it.
When's that come out?
On June 7th. So 3 weeks out.
Oh yeah, I'll take one of my nieces or both my nieces, go see it.
All right. I'll probably check it out just only because I have that pass, but I wouldn't pay fresh movie tickets for it. But we'll have some other little pieces we'll get to here later in the podcast too. But since we're talking superheroes and superhero movies, all right, Avengers numbers, where we're at on Monday, May 13th of recording, we are at $723 million domestically, which is the third all-time domestic, $2.49 billion worldwide, which is second only behind Avatar, and only about 300 million behind that. No, not even 300, just under 300 million. And we're pushing there. Here's some other big things to talk about, though. When we discuss, not Marvel, but we discuss Disney taking over the world. Huge. So domestically, Buena Vista, with their Fox franchises now for 2019, has sold 40% of the domestic box office ticket. So 40% of the revenue brought in, right around 40% domestically, has gone to the mouse. And so we have a lot of numbers we can talk about, a lot of data and stuff that everybody can look up to. But the question here now is we've been discussing it, and you guys talked about it last week, I wasn't here, and we're talking about its race for Avatar. And so my first thought was, okay, when we see these movies that have grabbed the box office, you know, have won this stuff, obviously, you know, Gone with the Wind was hugely different just because of the scope of it. And then even Titanic, when it took over, it was the scope of that movie. And then Avatar just revolutionized what we were doing with 3D technology. And then Endgame here, revolutionizing what we've done with, not like a whole franchise with 10, you know, 22 movies, 10 all accumulating to stuff that we never thought could go from the comic books to the screen. So they're all game changers. So Endgame belongs there in terms of game changer. My question now is the argument always comes back. Well, Gone with the Wind went back to theaters multiple times. Titanic even went back to theaters afterwards in 3D.
Avatar all these things sure went back multiple times.
Right. And all these things changed. So there's always the back and forth argument of inflation. What truly belongs at number one? And then there's also the argument of, does this market share even matter? We all know Disney was going to win the year, first of all, let alone when they got Fox, especially. So to other studios, are they even fighting for that number one spot anymore? Are they even fighting for a certain percentage of market share? Are they just trying to make sure certain franchises are big? And again, as consumers, do we even care about the inflation argument in terms of what's number one anymore?
All right, I lost the thread there. There was a lot of pieces.
Okay, so let's start with
one. What are the two questions?
Let's start with question one. Let's focus on that part first as our big discussion. Question one is, do we care? Are we going to make the argument about inflation anymore? Am I going to sit here on my defense of Game of Thrones is the number one movie all time at the box office because if you look at the cost of tickets, or are we just going with it and saying Endgame's going to own it?
I guess it depends on who you're talking about. If you're talking like people like us, then yeah, we do care, but generally no. Like, and that's true of everything. Like, what's the biggest, newest thing now? Like, because the inflation is not the only metric that you have to even take into consideration. You have to take into consideration number of theaters that exist, like how far people live to and from a theater, not just cost of tickets, but you have to also take into account the sheer number of people who live in the United States between the 1920s and 30s and now. Like, inflation's not enough of a number to like kind of make that kind of decision, because I would posit that while number of tickets sold, number of theaters around, like, obviously more people have seen Endgame than saw Gone with the Wind in theaters. I would posit that a larger percentage of the overall population of the United States saw Gone with the Wind in theaters than saw Endgame in theaters. And I guess no, it doesn't really matter. Like, for when it's all said and done, like, no one cares about, like, we care about great movies. We care about the impact they have on cinema and on society. But when it's all said and done, like, it's always going to be the newest, biggest, better thing. So,
yeah. And it gets down to, I mean, you can drill down to any number of numbers, but for pretty much anybody, it's going to be that raw number, right? You can adjust, sure, you can adjust for inflation, but I think it, in the end, it's still that raw number. Who brought in the most money in that time period and go from there? Because the same kind of argument you see in baseball when it comes to the home run king. Oh, who's hit the most home runs in a season? Well, it's this guy, but he had X number of more games. Okay, what about this guy who did it in, you know, hit that number of home runs in half of the number of at-bats? Like, oh, okay, well, you know, we talk about home runs per at-bat for the best home runs. In the end, we usually end up on just the raw number, who hit the most. So I think you do the same thing pretty much with movies. It's going to be who made the most, and it's going to be Endgame, and, you know, nobody's really fighting for second because those movies are a decade old now, at least. So,
yeah, and Adam makes a good comparison with like baseball. Like, when it comes down to it, with the sheer amount of numbers available at our fingertips and the sheer amount of analytics, like, you could twist these statistics to say anything you want about any movie. Like, which movie made the most money on every other Tuesday in odd number years in theaters and city? I mean, like, all that stuff exists now. Like, so we can make whatever it's important in terms of just like what's popular, and it's important in terms of what's the zeitgeist. But when it's all said and done, like, there's good movies and bad movies, and there's popular movies and not popular movies. And we're always going to care about the headline, which is this movie made more money than any movie ever made.
Right. And in terms of raw dollars, but it's a good point. We're talking about some of these subpoints, and the reason I just wanted to have it as a discussion is when I was editing the episode from last week, and Bob brought up the Gone with the Wind and how many times Gone with the Wind came back to theaters. And you loosely touched on that point. That was going to be one of my arguments is, well, how many screens the first time it was in theater, or even how many screens the other times, even with all those accumulated of how many times Gone with the Wind came back, your total screens is probably still less than what Endgame has. And as you mentioned, we've seen quite a population boom and what we do with our free time from the 40s to...
Well, you also have to take into account that that movie came out in 1939. So after you went and saw it in the theater, if you ever wanted to watch it again, you had to go back to a theater and watch it. You didn't have VCRs and Netflix and DVD players. Like, so that's a whole nother thing. Like, that was the form of entertainment. Television didn't exist. I mean, you couldn't go and watch. You couldn't. HBO wasn't going to show it on repeat every week, you know, 6 months later. You wanted to see it again, you had to go back to the theater and have someone showing it. And because of that, movies stayed in theaters for obscenely long amounts of time. Like, those movies were in theaters for ages. I mean, Gone with the Wind's still getting showings today in theaters. So,
but we talk about 1939. You're talking about a very different economic structure. But to me, with Gone with the Wind, Hattie McDaniel, I mean, 1939, a black actress winning an Academy Award for her performance. That's just insane. And I was trying to explain to my son, because we were talking about this too, about those that have dominated the box office over the years. And I brought up the whole game-changing thing. All these movies that do this are the game changers. Tons of people, anything that's a big blockbuster now, we're feeling more and more confident that worldwide it's going to break the $1 billion mark. It's coming out as a blockbuster, going to release across countries. A lot of times we can be confident saying it's going to break $1 billion. The ones that are hitting this pinnacle are game changers, and people are ripping Avatar to shreds right now, wanting Avengers Endgame to pass it. But no matter what you look at it in terms of plot, James Cameron does amazing things when he makes movies, and he did so there again. And the same with Titanic. Titanic wasn't different in terms of these special effects just blew my mind, but it was the scope of it, to see the Titanic that size, to go through those long sequences of it sinking and the boat going straight up and they're hanging out. Like, it was, you were experiencing it like you'd never seen it before. And that was the same with Gone with the Wind. And I was explaining to my son, yeah, movies were a big deal then. And you had, over the course of cinema, you've seen 3-hour movies to, you know, Cinescope, all the things that they've done to make these movies bigger. But when you looked at Gone with the Wind, and I can think of the scene near the end when she's running through like where all the injured soldiers are, and it just zooms out and you see hundreds and hundreds of people just laying there. You have to remember, this is 1939 and it had that many extras laying there injured. It was in color. Like, I mean, it's, you're talking about things that definitely are, it's just mind blowing. And that kind of leads me to, is where does Avengers belong here? And I feel like we're all on the same page. Yes. As I was mentioning earlier, this is quite the accomplishment, at least in the end of, this is the accumulation of 22 movies. This is the ending for 22 films.
And I don't want to get in the weeds with the box office numbers on it, but I was going to mention earlier when you were throwing out the numbers, after this weekend, it's a really good chance that it won't be the highest grossing movie domestically of all time. It's like on pace over whatever 17 days it's been out now. It has now fallen behind The Last Jedi's pace, and it still needs to make another like $270 million. It's going to pass Avatar domestically, and it's definitely going to pass Avatar internationally just on sheer momentum alone. Like, it doesn't have that much more to make. It may not pass The Last Jedi domestically.
Right. So The Last Jedi could still stand as domestic, because that's, how is it? It's 900 and something million. What is it? Do you have it in front of you? No,
okay. It's 930 something. I don't have it in front of me.
So I feel like 933 or something around there. But anyways, I think you're right. And we just brought up too, what's the next 4 weeks are crowded. And most people that we know have already seen Avengers 2, 3, or in Bob's case, 4 times. And these are the same people that are going to go see, you know, Brightburn, even at the lowest, below Dark Phoenix, Aladdin, John Wick. or, you know, or families are even going to go so see, as we talked about Secret Life of Pets or the Dog's Way Home one that's coming out this weekend that I have to take my daughter to before I even get to see John Wick. But anyways, no complaints there. You bring up a very valid point. We're already talking, not only us, but many people are already talking about it. Like it's going to be the champion, and domestically, at least, it still may not be. So we'll see. All right. So as always with our big discussion topics, that's only the first half. I want to go second half, but I do want to leave it to you that anywhere you find the Nerdcast in the comments, let us know, do you think inflation matters when you're talking about the box office champion? Is it Gone with the Wind? Is it Titanic, Avatar, or is it, well, still Avatar, or is it possibly going to be a new champion? And in 10 years from now, whatever that champion will be when the next game changer comes up. So the other half of my question, and I did kind of convoluted it all, threw it all at you at first. The other half was, now that's us as fans. We're talking about as fans. Now, if we're running these other studios, let's mention the lowly Paramount right now. That guy's been struggling lately. We talk about these other studios. What are we even doing anymore when it comes to, are we even talking about market share anymore? Or are we just focusing on, I just need a good franchise to make a lot of money to fund these other things, or I'm looking at award type movies. What is the focus now as Disney is just taking over everything?
I mean, we're not talking about it, but they definitely are. Like, that's definitely a concern for them. And I think it should be a concern for us, just in terms of, like, we've had many conversations over the, you know, Hollywood doesn't do anything new. It's all sequels and reboots and takes on, like, we want to be the next Hunger Games. We want to be the next Marvel. We want to be the next this. We want to be the next that. Like, that should be a concern. Don't get me wrong. Disney makes a wide swath of genres, and their studios have all sorts of different things they have. And now even with Fox in there, but I think you need to be concerned with any sort of creative art, like the more people contributing, the better the final product you get. So, like, I don't think we need to be, no one really cares about that market share thing, but with all media, like, that should be a bit of a concern, I think.
I get what you're coming from, but think of this now. Fox Searchlight has Disney money, like, not, you know, not main Fox, not all the movies that they do, not the X-Men and all the other crazy stuff that Fox does, but Fox Searchlight now has Disney money, you know. So if they lose all of the money, but they're still making amazing films, and they've done some really good films recently, it's okay. Nobody cares. Disney's going to tell Fox Searchlight how much they can have, and they're going to go out and they're going to make a bunch of movies with it, whether they get any money back or not. Probably inconsequential.
But I think Disney has that ability because of how big they've become. I don't know that other studios can.
Sure. But if any of them are worried about market share now, that ship sailed 10 years ago. They already lost. And, you know, there's no coming back. Nobody's got a new idea out there that's going to take down the Marvel movies or the Star Wars movies or the Pixar movies or the Disney live action movies. I mean, they're just not going to happen. So they just all need to be focused on make a good movie, make money.
So you're kind of answering it right now, but then that's a better way. New wording of the question is, are they trying to take it down? Do you try to find that new amazing thing? Which, I obviously, everybody's always going to be doing research and trying to come up with the next big idea. But is your main focus now, how do we do something better than the MCU? Or is your main focus now, like you said, let's just make our properties right now and get as much money as we can until we stumble upon the next big thing?
I guess it depends on who are you talking about in the organization. Are you
Anybody.
Talking about the president of the studio? Are you talking about, because here's what it comes down to. The people who are the last word, who make the, they have exactly one focus, and that focus is the same today as it was yesterday, the day before. It's, we need to make as much money as possible off of the properties that we own. We need to put as little in as we can and get as much out of it as we can. Like, our return on investment needs to be, because they're all publicly held companies. They all have shareholders that they have to report to. And they're all, for the most part now, no, because Paramount's part of it. I was going to say, they're all the big five. So Warner Brothers, Paramount, Sony, I guess Fox isn't really. So Universal, Disney would say, they're all small, infinitesimally small pieces of much larger media conglomerates. So they have to pull their weight. So here's how much money you get, and you need to pull this much money out of it. So, like, market share is a concern, just encourage that the bigger market share you have, the more you know, the more tension you get, the more butts in seats you get. But their focus is the same as it always has been, at least in the top levels, and that is we have to make as much money as possible.
For sure. And if, I don't know, it's just, it's things to think about and it's open discussion. I'm not really targeting anything or trying to figure out anything. Just thought it was a good discussion piece as it gets away from, like we said, just listing numbers or list of what Avengers is doing and more
well, and
behind
you said,
it all.
And what did you say? It's like they're, what, 10 years too late? Was that like, so like when you think about it, who was, how, what was Disney's market share 10 years ago?
That would be, that would be a good question. I have no idea.
It was pretty damn good. It was 11%.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
They were in fifth place in 2009 behind Warner Brothers at 19, Paramount at 13, Sony at 13, and Fox at 13.
That acquisition of Marvel is looking pretty damn good.
So you go, you go back to
Star Wars.
That's it. And now, to be fair, also that has to do with the fact that like that was around the period of time where Disney was just back then, just then kicking back up their like movie release, the amount of her movies they came out a year, because they came out with only 20, like four movies that year, and Warner Brothers came out with like 37 movies that year. But that was also the heyday of Paramount. Paramount only came out with 16 movies that year and still made more than like everybody. So.
Right. And that's, yeah, we often forget because of how much Disney does now that there was that after the turn of the century, that little lull where they kind of slowed down on the especially the traditional animation style. But great points. And the other thing we're talking about, and I even just said it too, is we talk about their acquisition of Marvel. And then I said Star Wars, but Lucasfilm, Disney hasn't even pulled out all the punches yet. They still got Indiana Jones to play with. Like they still got other things in their pockets that they haven't even messed with. And they've started to talk about it. And obviously there's always going to be rumors. And they've probably been looking at it since day one. But it could possibly get bigger. And what made me really think about this too is that while Marvel or Disney has been dominating since the MCU, the box office over DC, DC on the comic side has still been king of the comics. They had been for quite a while. As of March especially, not only has Marvel over the past about a year now, I think, been taking back over the sales, they eclipsed 50% of all comic sales for March 2019. So remember, it's not just Marvel and DC here, which they do make up almost all of it when you really look at the big scope of things, but all other publishers, everybody else fell in less than 49% or 49 point something percent where Disney went over, or Marvel, excuse me, went over 50% here. So Tyler, you mentioned they are just a piece of a giant, you know, a big corporate puzzle. This is obviously a direct influence from what's happening cinematically between Captain Marvel and the Avengers. And of course, everything building up to this endgame. So it is impacting other parts of the business too.
Yeah. I don't know that anyone at Warner Brothers or whatever is losing sleep over, you know, I mean, it's a bellwether for other parts of the properties and like the awareness of the brand and the, I guess, you know, brand awareness, stuff like that. But you could have 100% market share of every single comic sold in the United States in perpetuity. And over 10 years, you might make enough to fund one comic book movie.
Possibly. I get that in the grand scheme of things. You say nobody at Warner Brothers is losing sleep, but yeah, somebody is.
There are definitely people in charge of DC 100% like that. This is a concern. And I think it also is like, it's a futile concern. Like there's gotta be a certain amount of impotence feeling there, because at the same time, like those aren't the guys making the decisions about whether or not they make good movies or not. Like they can continue to make all the best comics they can and put the best stories on the page, but it's a different, I mean, it's comic books are a thing that unless you're still a comic book person, like no one's coming to buy new comic books unless there's something driving them there, which is good movies. And ain't nobody on DC's editorial staff have any say in like what's being made in the movie department.
Yeah. And that's gotta be stressful for them. That's what I'm saying. It's high up.
But there's nothing they can, I mean, that's the thing. It's an impotent, like free, like fury. Like there's nothing they can do, but I don't know. It's interesting and it hurts their bottom line, but.
Well, and that sales metric and that market share metric doesn't tell you anything about story. It doesn't mean that Marvel's making better comics right now. They're making more identifiable comics. And I think Iggy hit the nail on the head. It's those movies, man. And if you had to look at the surge in the properties over the last 6 months, I bet it's Avengers titles, Captain Marvel titles, even probably some Black Panther titles from lingering over from the Black Panther movie. So,
well, Marvel does
it hard to fight.
Yeah, Marvel does a great job of also releasing specific comics that, for you that don't read a lot of comics, here's a few stories that kind of tie into what's happening in the MCU to give you a better understanding of these characters, which is genius. And for some reason, DC isn't doing that. But there is a huge point of when you mention that, Shazam was fun. We enjoyed Shazam. I definitely have made articles on the site and made comments that that Marvel's Captain Marvel was far superior in terms of movie. I stand behind that. But the biggest thing here is Shazam, when you look at it, who are you driving to buy comics? It's another white superhero with all of these powers. Yeah, it's fun and it was entertaining. But here you are on the other side, bringing characters to the screen like Captain Marvel, like Carol Danvers. And now you have all these little girls that have never collected comics saying, "Mom, Dad, take me to the comic book store. I want that Captain Marvel comic." And I know this hands-on experience because I have that little girl saying that exact thing who wants that stuff. So it's, like you said, it may not even be story. March's Shazam could have been 20 times better than Captain Marvel. I don't know. But because of what's happening here cinematically, you've got a whole new audience being reached with the MCU. And as we've said a million times over, the DCU is falling short on doing that.
Well, how do things like DC Universe and Marvel Unlimited, is that what they call it? How do those subscription services impact those numbers? Do they get
I'm sure that they internally track that stuff, but there's no external. Like when they talk about market share in comic books, it's 100%
just physical books or individual.
Well, not only that, it's not even Marvel and DC. It's Diamond. Diamond says this is how many of this one we shipped. This is how many of that one we shipped. And to be fair, like Marvel's been ahead of DC for the last decade and a half. Like DC hasn't had a month where they beat Marvel in market share, in dollars or in units sold, in years and years. But it's always been close. It's always been like Marvel 38, DC 34, and they've always hung just under 40%. And now we're reaching the point where not all of that market share that Marvel's taking, they're taking from DC. They're also taking it from Image and IDW and all those kinds of those.
That's the huge thing. It's these little guys are getting shut out. And you bring up a great point there. Let's talk about that real quick. Diamond. So example, Project Nerd Publishing. We did not have a distribution deal with Diamond. So even if I went and sold 10 comic books to a comic store, that 0.00001% would not be considered in this factor. It's anything that Diamond ships, because Diamond is pretty much the exclusive one to do it. And there's definitely, that's a whole nother discussion about that part of the industry and what needs to be changed there. But that's the huge point is DC's. I think to say what you were saying earlier, Tyler, nobody's losing sleep over it over there because they're still making money. They still have enough share. They're still doing what they need to do. And they're still telling great stories. What's really being impacted here are these other little guys. And we're seeing it with like Lion Forge and Oni Press merging now this past month. You have these other ones that are merging. And we saw it years ago where even smaller Devils Do with First, you know, all of these ones are having to find creative ways to stay relevant and to get their books in stores. DC doesn't have to worry about that. I mean, obviously every company worries about creatives, but not to the level these other guys are. I don't think Image Comics isn't the biggest threat because Image was at about 5 or 6 years ago now when they enticed every phenomenal creator to come over and make their own creator-owned title and has now just sailed amazingly with Saga, Wicked Divide, East Away, all of those titles. They're doing okay. But it's to that level.
Yeah, but at the same time, Image is doing as well, if not better, than any comic book publisher can do that's not Marvel or DC. Because when it's all said and done, Marvel and DC have a 100-year head start on everyone else. Like, you know, they've been doing this for a really long time, and that's like the market was already broken. Like, it's like someone trying to decide they're going to come out with an operating system tomorrow to rival Mac OS and Windows. And if in 10 years or 20 years you've hit 5-10% market share, like that's a big damn success. So like Image, like I know we hate when we like go numbers with it, but so like last year, the entire year, total like dollars spent on comic books physically in retail stores, Marvel 38%, DC 30%, Image 9.9%, and the next highest publisher is under 4%. So, I mean, the fact that Image has 10% market share is, that's insane. Like, that's huge. that's a huge success.
It is. And they're seeing, it's because they're kind of similar to when the 90s, when they started. And like you said, a big head start. Yeah. Image is younger than all of us right here. Like it's 90s, and they did it with all these creators coming over, and they kind of redid that again with Gillen, Brian K. Vaughan, all these great people that are just phenomenal in telling stories. But it's a matter of Disney is just, it's just kind of the whole topic we're talking about in our big discussion. It's Disney just, it's like just taking over everything. And we joke about it, but the numbers are supporting it very strongly. And I think only brought up briefly, which is a good point. Maybe the one big worry here is that once you get some company that's in so much creative control that they can do whatever they want, do we lose that drive to be original and creative and to do something different because they're like, we're just going to keep doing this thing that's working and well, the smaller not only, people can't.
Not only that, but like you're going to get smaller companies who, depending on who's in, you know, whether it's creatives in charge or, you know, managers in charge of creatives, like the big dog at the top gets complacent and just does the same thing. But then you're also going to get non-creatives who are in charge of these other companies who say, if we want to be successful, we have to copy what they're doing as opposed to doing something different. So,
yeah, very much.
But I mean, yeah, the comic book, it's tricky. Like when you talk about marketing, like Marvel having 50% is huge, but at the same time, like, and to be fair, we go to a lot of conventions. We know a lot of publishers. We're comic book guys, but there are comic book publishers with whom we're all familiar and most comic readers are familiar with, who don't even crack, you know, a third of a percent. And they're considered to be, for instance, Devil's Due does not crack the like 0.3%, like the lowest, or Zenoscope, like one of Iggy's favorite ones. Like they have a 0.3% market share of physical comic book sales in the United States. Zenoscope still doing well. Like it's not like, I mean, they're not doing Image well, but they're still paying the bills.
They're still successful in terms of they're bringing money in. And again, you mentioned earlier, this is a drop in the bucket compared to what the studios are doing in terms of money. But we are the Nerdcast. We are comic book guys. And I would assume people that listen to us are into comics too. So it is impactful on what's happening in the industry. I think my big question is what does Disney grab next? And does some big company, like we talk about Universal or Paramount, you know, Comcast, Universal, Viacom, do one of them buy in and try to buy Image Comics, or maybe even one of the smaller guys to do it? I mean, we saw Netflix pick up Millarworld, right? So are we going to see that with somebody trying to get Image and with Image trying to do that?
Yeah, that's the really big question. Because as of right now, like properties from some of these smaller publishers have been made. Like for instance, Dark Horse. Dark Horse has had a lot of its properties turned into TV shows and movies, specifically like Hellboy. But why hasn't someone just gone and said, just bought the entire rights to the entire Dark Horse catalog, and then you just have the people under, like in your creative, like, hey, here's a huge catalog you have to choose from. Find something that speaks to you and make a show out of it. Like Image, it's a little bit different because Image is all creator-owned comics for the most part. Like they each have the rights to sell their rights to each of their own properties alone, but someone like an IDW or a Dark Horse or a Boom or an Oni Press or a Dynamite, you know, like some of those. But then again, like now that I say that out loud, a lot of the newer, smaller, successful publishers have gone the creator owned route. Unlike,
well, you get something like IDW as well. Like what's their most known title?
Transformers, Ninja Turtles.
Already have movies.
Ghostbusters.
Already has movies.
IDW is a hard example because most of their franchises, My Little Pony, are things to right. where they contracted with something that was already
they do exactly
it too, right?
IDW is all about like the license. So like they do Transformers, they do Ghostbusters, they do
G.I. Joe, pretty much all of Hasbro,
DuckTales, and Gears of War. Like so almost every, with very few exceptions, like what's that one? The Highest House and some other ones. Like almost everything IDW is a licensed property. So they license properties and make comic books about them. IDW is usually like Back to the Future has a comic on IDW. Isn't IDW the one that usually will do like, who does like the Firefly comics or the Buffy comics and stuff like that? Is that IDW or is that someone else?
We get the solicitations for it, but I can't remember. I feel like it's not IDW, but I could be wrong.
It's Dark Horse.
Thank you. Yeah, Dark Horse.
So they work in reverse then.
Pretty much.
Instead of licensing comic books out, they license other properties in and make the comics that way.
Yeah. Which is also a good.
Yeah, it's a good strat. Yeah,
because you get people who already bought into that.
Yeah.
World and want more comics.
You know, they basically saw the trend early as well, right? So they saw these movies and these other things are going to be driving people to pick up source material, or in this case, the same material in a different format, and go from there. So I think, you know, that's a smart play by them.
Yeah. I do think it's funny. IDW, it is funny because of Marvel, Disney now owning Marvel, but IDW is the company that owns the rights to the comics of all Disney properties. So like the DuckTales comics are done by IDW, and like the Tangled comic is done by IDW, and pretty much any comic book that's based on a traditional Disney franchise is done by IDW. Like, I'm pretty sure they have I think they even have the Big Hero 6 series is an IDW
right. comic. So, which is huge here because the contract for that is done very differently. So when Marvel and Lucasfilm were both acquired by Disney, Disney had in the contract rights for the comics to be able to bring the Star Wars comics underneath the Marvel umbrella, because there was a loophole in those agreements. These things have set terms already where these comics remain under the IDW power. I don't know what the set time frame is or anything like that, but you bring up a good point. Those are still not being pulled under Marvel, because you would think the strategy here would be to grab everything Disney, Star Wars, whatever, and put it under the Marvel umbrella. They are trying to do that. They just can't with certain ones of these. And IDW is definitely profiting from that. But anyways, we've gone down the rabbit hole to the comic side, which is great. We are running low on time, so I'm going to wrap up our big discussion. Again, big topic this week was Disney, what they're owning, market share, how it's impacting the comic industry, how it's impacting the other movie studios, and what their decisions will be. We'd love to hear your take on any of it. Not just really one question. There seems to be a lot of questions we had here and a lot of things to ponder. I would love to hear if I was Image Comics, what do you think would be a good partner on the studio side? So any of you that are listening, anywhere you find us, Podbean, ProjectNerd.com, iTunes, Google Play, and the many other places, obviously our social media accounts, let us know in the comments what you think about all of this, how the Disney takeover is impacting it, and maybe even get creative. Tell us what Disney's buying next. Tell us where Image is going, if they're going anywhere. Stuff like that. But before we get into final thoughts, we do have a few other small things that I wanted to touch on. Killing Eve, which I did start watching here the past couple weeks. I've only gotten 3 episodes in, but it is a really good show. You can find that on Hulu. Is BBC One, or I'm sorry, BBC for us, BBC USA. Is it BBC America, I think? I don't know. Anyways, Killing Eve, tons of praise, was up for, I want to say it was 9 BAFTA awards. It was like a huge number. Walked away with best dramatic series, as well as best actress for Jodie Comer and best supporting actress for Fiona Shaw. Really interesting show, really cool concept, really dark. If you're into all that stuff, check it out. It's fun. But that did some great stuff there too. You can always go to google.com and check out what else won at the BAFTA awards, as that was a big deal. Something I'm super excited for, Invader Zim. I don't know, Adam, we were talking about it before we started recording. I didn't even realize this was going to be a thing, but the Invader Zim movie is about wrapped up and Netflix will be dropping it this summer. That's right, we're getting an Invader Zim animated movie.
That's not the most exciting thing about this deal.
What's the most exciting thing about this deal?
Prior to this, so they've been working on, Nickelodeon was working on multiple movies of their franchises. So they made the Hey Arnold, the Jungle movie, which did not do well, which caused them to kind of pull back because the Invader Zim trailer had already been out. But prior to Invader Zim and right after Hey Arnold, they have already made, completed, and wrapped a Rocko's Modern Life movie that Nickelodeon has been sitting on the shelf for the last like 6 months that is also going to be coming to Netflix with Invader Zim.
What? Yes. So Rocko's Modern Life and Invader Zim movies this summer on Netflix. As more information comes up, we will definitely be talking about it because that's some exciting stuff right there for sure. But
I'm sing my doom song. Doom, 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 doom.
Watiti's Jojo Rabbit, which I've mentioned a few times and was on my top 20 most anticipated movies of 2019. We mentioned it was coming in the fall. They have officially set a release date for that. That's October 18th. Just as a reminder, Jojo Rabbit follows a Jewish family in hiding in Europe during World War II, where the young Jewish boy has an imaginary friend that just so happens to be Adolf Hitler. So think Diary of Anne Frank in hiding, but with the young boy having an imaginary friend of Hitler as opposed to journaling the terrible things that are going on. Should be interesting. Should be interesting for sure, put it that way. And then, of course, which this one I put on here for Bob because I thought Bob would be super excited for this, but we'll drop it for you, Bob. the trailer has dropped for Clownado. That's right, Clownado, as in Sharknado meets It. It is a tornado full of clowns hitting the mainland. I don't even know if I can, I can't even stomach the
whole
trailer.
Why are we doing these things?
Movies that know what they are and are on the nose and terrible are increasingly popular, especially when they just get licensed to be on TV and it doesn't cost as much. And you get a few, I don't want to say has-beens, but you get a few, yeah, has-beens that show up in these things and drop a few funny lines. But if you're into that stuff, Clownado, the trailer is out there. It is not on Project Nerd.
I take it back, Tyler. I'm now very concerned with Disney having as much control as they do.
Damn right you should be.
Anyways, so all right, we are about our time. Bob never showed up. We'll have to figure out where he's at. Maybe he got busy. Maybe, you know what? Money is Bob's at the Avengers movie for about the fifth or sixth time. He had to go see it in whatever scale.
Yeah, what he's watching Pikachu for the third or fourth time.
Oh, which we didn't even touch on that.
But the highest opening for a video game movie ever.
Yeah.
Which isn't exactly a high bar, but
that's true. I did see it this weekend.
It didn't beat Endgame this weekend either.
So. No,
sure did not.
But it wasn't too far behind Endgame. It wasn't too far behind it. I think by what, 10, 12 million?
Yeah, something like that.
Do you know what the previously reigning highest video game grossing movie was?
Is it Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat?
No, not even remotely close.
Mario? Mario Bros?
Nope. Try again. No, but that's not even as high as you would think it would be. Really? There's only like one Resident Evil in the top 10, and I thought Resident Evil would be a bunch of them.
Me too. That's
all right. Tell us what it is.
What you got, bud?
It was the very first of the Angelina Jolie Tomb Raiders, made like four.
Oh yes, obviously.
Stupid Tomb Raider.
Didn't even think about that one, but that's an obvious pick with it. All right. Well, while we're wrapping this up, Adam, why don't you get us started with your final thoughts for the week?
Final thoughts. Screw the outside, you guys. So I went to try to do outside things this weekend. My good friend Iggy was in town. You guys may know him.
He's a nice guy.
And we tried to do an outside activity. It is, you know, end of spring, beginning of summer. We are baseball fans. We bought baseball tickets. We drove down to the baseball stadium. We did not get out of the car because it was raining cats and dogs. Went and got a beer. Thought, hey, this will work. We'll keep an eye on Twitter. Hour later, no updates. They say they're going to play the game. They're supposed to play a doubleheader because they're already making up a game that was rained out a couple weeks ago. Screw the outside. We went home, played some MLB The Show 19. Good times.
I think we watched Signs as well.
Oh, we did watch night. Signs. Yeah. We had a good weekend. We did some fun things. Yeah, screw outside. Watch Signs. Play video games. You get to have fun.
If you are in the quote-unquote Bible Belt, you are definitely familiar that April and May only has rain. Only. Everywhere. So it was exciting, but just a correction there. You guys had a beer that night. I couldn't because I was already so sick with the amount of food we had already consumed. Oh, I couldn't even move.
There's a lot of good food down here, right?
It was. There was. Some of the best tacos I ever had. All right. Tyler, what you got for us in final thoughts this week?
I don't know. I had a day off the other day. I've been trying to catch up on a lot of streaming that I've fallen behind on. So I've finally caught back up and finished the season two of The Orville, which is now coming back for season three. It just got renewed. That's exciting. I'm also started watching, finally getting around to watching Get Shorty, the TV show on, is it Epix or whatever, with Chris O'Dowd, sort of based on the Elmore Leonard novel that was also the John Travolta movie. It's actually pretty fun. Got Ray Romano in it. It's pretty funny. Also, for those of you who are curious, the second before Pikachu, but the third, this is going to make you despair for the fate of society. Up until this, now the third highest opening weekend for a video game movie, and the second highest grossing video game based movie of all time is Angry Birds.
Which makes sense. We just saw the Angry Birds 2 trailer, and I was like, who saw the first movie? Oh. That answers that question.
I mean, not that many people. I mean, it made $107 million total over its entire gross, but that's more than every other comic book movie not called Lara Croft Tomb Raider. So,
right. All right. Yeah. And how good was that season finale two-parter for Orville?
Oh, so good.
Oh, yeah. I loved it. That concept with the time travel was great and everything, but it's, great.
Such a good show.
It is, and I'm so glad to see it for season three. Adam.
I was also excited to see, what's her name? Alara back. That was cool.
Right? That appearance was pretty interesting.
Alston Sage or whatever her name is, yeah.
So with that, I will say we did see Pokemon this weekend, Detective Pikachu, Pokemon's Detective Pikachu, excuse me. And the target audience is definitely the younger audience. We'll just put it that way. It was cohesive. Special effects were good. Ryan Reynolds, entertaining. Few moments where I laughed. I wasn't crazy about it overall, but I'm also one of the few people that does not play Pokemon Go. I'm sure my kids will love it. I went and saw it without them. Sorry, kids. But anyways, I am looking forward to this weekend with John Wick 3, as well as catching up on streaming too. So some new series out there. We brought it up at the beginning. Definitely check out The Wandering Earth. Let us know what you think. I've started Dead to Me, which Netflix was heavily pushing, one of their new series. First episode's really interesting. Then you get some twists. Second, third episode, I was starting to get bored. I finished the third episode before we started this. And at the very end, another big twist, and now I'm back in. So it's kind of up and down. I'm kind of interested to see where it goes. But check it out. Let us know what you think. Other than that, as always, give us feedback on anything we talked about, especially, again, our big topic being Disney's world dominance and how that's impacting everything and everyone. But any of the other topics we brought up, as well as if anything we missed this week, as there are obviously a lot of movie trailers, a lot of things going on, you can head over to projectnerd.com, check it all out. We have a great team of writers putting that together, as well as a great event staff coming together. We'll be out in Denver at the first weekend of June, June 1st and 2nd. Looks like we're going to be set up in Mile High Comics for Denver Comic Con weekend. Shuttle will be running. So if you are going to Pop Culture Con, you can head on over to Mile High Comics and still make your way back to the convention and come visit us for a little bit. But obviously the big thing, June 28th, 29th, and 30th, OCON Expo in Omaha Council Bluffs at the Mid-America Center. Full Project Nerd team will be there. We'll be in the Bud Light Pavilion right at the entrance to where you can see all the fun stuff Project Nerd is doing. And of course, our third wing, or our third division of Project Nerd, our podcast. So if you haven't been paying attention, we do have our new podcast out, and we still have some more to come. But Diving Deep has hit, seemed to be very popular. It's a very tough topic. So of course, Diving Deep, we are diving deep into topics that are a little bit more serious at times. And the first one was with Mary from Justice 61, and it talks about child sex trafficking. And it was a huge deal because huge big events is where we see more of that happening right here in the United States. And obviously a lot of these conventions are drawing a number of people. So some good advice on what it is like happening right under our nose, because there was a lot of things I didn't even realize, as well as things you can do to help with that. Next week's episode will be on mental health. I'm Not Famous is back, and Modern Sex is back. So yeah, we had a lot of podcasts, guys. We got a lot of good stuff happening. So that's it for episode 194 of the Nerdcast. As we said, next week we will be talking Game of Thrones, and season 8 will be done. We have a lot to discuss there, but until then, we will catch you. Episode 195, same nerd time, same nerd channel.
New nerd time.
Bye. Oh, yeah.
Hey, Pro Nerds, thanks for listening to the podcast. If you like the Nerdcast and other amazing Project Nerd podcasts, please go give us a subscription, a like, a review, wherever you find us, as we need your love and support to continue making awesome content. Next week, we'll be back with another great episode of the Nerdcast, as well as other original Project Nerd podcasts.